Hello and welcome into another episode of Locked On Wolves. Today on the show, I'll tell you what D'Angelo Russell is doing markedly better than what he's done really ever in his career. There's certain aspects of his game that are better than ever before. Plus, I want to look at the Timberwolves. They've won 11 as a team. They've won 11 of 15 games. What have they done so much better? And the really interesting thing about their defense as of right now, we'll also look at Wolves Kings from Saturday ahead of the matchup again, the rematch on Monday night at Target Center. It's all coming on the show. Welcome in. You are Locked On Wolves.
You are Locked On Timberwolves, your daily Minnesota Timberwolves podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
Hello and welcome to the Locked On Wolves podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day. My name is Ben Beacon. I'm the host of Locked On Wolves. Today's episode is brought to you by Prize Picks. First time users can receive a 100% instant deposit match up to $100 with the promo code Locked On. That's prizepicks.com, promo code Locked On. Happy Monday, everybody. Happy Timberwolves game day. The Wolves Kings rematch from after the Wolves win on Saturday over Sacramento is Monday night. We'll talk about that towards the end of the show. Plenty to get to first. D'Lo, some overall team defensive numbers, etc. First of all, though, a big thank you for making Locked On Wolves your first listen every day. Of course, Locked On Wolves is free and available everywhere, including YouTube, as well as all of your favorite audio platforms. You can also watch the show on the Locked On Sports Minnesota Roku app or the app on Amazon Fire TV. You can also follow on Twitter at Locked On T-Wolves. Don't forget the T and at B Beacon, which is two B's, two E's, C-K-E-N. All right, plenty to get to today. I want to start with D'Angelo Russell. D'Lo has been playing really, really well of late. And there's a couple things going on here that I want to dive into. First of all, I think it's important to note that D'Angelo Russell last season, I think it's easy to forget how good he was for much of last season. And I get that he's a polarizing player. And every time I talk about him, I want to throw that out there because I promise, like, it feels like half of fans think he's, maybe not half. There's plenty of D'Lo stands, right? It's like a Derrick Rose type thing. And I get it. Like there's a lot of people that, well, I don't really get it, but there's a lot of people that think he can do no wrong. On the other hand, there's people that think he's like the worst player on the floor at all times. And he's a terrible defender. And like, he drags down your offense when he gets into shot hunting mode and all this stuff. And as is almost always the case, the truth lies somewhere in the middle. D'Angelo Russell is a solid, functional, starting NBA point guard. If I had to describe him, like if somebody asked me, what are your thoughts on D'Angelo Russell as a player in like 30 seconds or less, I would say the reason he's polarizing is because there's a high variance in his play. When he's bad, he's really bad. The defense is unplayable, really. It's really, really bad. The shot hunting's not great. He doesn't get to the free throw line. He doesn't rebound. And it's pretty bad, really bad. When he's good, he's probably like a top 25 offensive player in the league because he's so efficient from everywhere on the floor. I know he doesn't get to the line a ton, but he can a little. He makes his shots when he gets there. He can be a deadly three-point shooter. He's very streaky, and he's a really good passer when he makes the right decisions, and he can be passable defensively. We saw this for much of last season. He was a pretty decent defender for a lot of last year. I think he really is an above-average starting NBA point guard. He's not an all-star. I think at times he's borderline all-star in terms of his stretches of play, and he's one of those stretches now. But sometimes he really hurts your team. And I think the average, like if you put it all together, I don't know, he's an above average point guard. He's a good point guard, a solid NBA point guard. The problem is that he's not solid all the time. It's either up here or it's down here, right? That's the thing with D'Lo. Right now, he's playing extremely well. So I want to dive into a little bit of what is so unique about how he's playing right now compared to what he's done to this point in his career. In fact, if you just look at some of the advanced metrics, you'd say, okay, he's getting close to where the level was last year. If you look at, you know, ESPN's real plus minus or win shares or whatever box score metric you like, those numbers are looking much better. However, if you look at his rate-based stats, and I love to do this on Basketball Reference, I think it's a really valuable tool, he's down in a lot of areas. And so at first glance, you're like, wait a minute, how come the metrics are saying he's playing as good or better as he did all of last season? Like, for instance, his rebound rate is actually below where it was last year. It's currently the second lowest rebound, total rebound rate of his entire career and the lowest defensive rebound rate he's had in his entire career. That's an issue because the Wolves are such a bad defensive rebounding team, but that's not the point I'm making right now. But the lowest defensive rebound rate of his career, the lowest assist rate he's had since his second season in the league, which was his second of two seasons in LA with the Lakers. A really, really low assist rate. Now, of course, that's largely because if you don't watch the Wolves on a daily basis, you would understand that Anthony Edwards is initiating a lot of offense. D'Lo also played some minutes with Jordan McLaughlin earlier in the season when McLaughlin was initiating offense. Kyle Anderson is running a lot of offense. So that's why. Right. So he's down in rebound rate, down to a career low in defensive rebound rate, the third lowest assist rate in his career, and his lowest since 2017. All those things are true. Plus, his turnover rate is up. He's averaging 15.6% is his turnover rate. That's his highest since his first year in Brooklyn. So the 2017-18 season. His highest turnover rate in, what is that, 5 years. So why, all of a sudden, are all the metrics agreeing that he's been a solidly above average point guard? Well, a couple of reasons. Number one, he's shooting three-pointers at a career-high percentage, which, remember, earlier this season, it was the opposite. He was shooting a career low, and that's how these things are so fickle. I mean, it's a little bit like Torian Prince last year. I mean, Russell was never shooting as badly as Prince was. Remember last year on Christmas, Torian Prince was like 20% from three, finished the year closer to 40% for his career. He'd been a high 30% three-point shooter, Torian Prince was. D'Lo was like 33-34% for most of the season. But he shot 34% last year on the year. So there was some concern that like, hey, okay, he had a couple hot years there, you know, Golden State, Minnesota, when he first came to Minnesota's last year in Brooklyn. But now he's up to 39.1% from three, which would be easily his career best. It's above his career average of 36% from three. So he's shooting a career mark from three-point range. He also is shooting the ball extremely well at the free throw line, 87%. Now the rate, the frequency isn't up, but the overall shooting numbers look much better because he's shooting the ball so well from the free throw line and so well from beyond the arc. His effective field goal percentage and his true shooting percentage are both career highs sitting here right now. And that's the biggest reason. So taking that another step further, he's over 60% true shooting percentage, which if you're not familiar, true shooting percentage takes into account all three different types of field goals. It's better than straight field goal percentage because it factors in the difference of a two-point field goal, a three-point field goal, and free throws. And he's 60.5% true shooting percentage. The next best of his career was 55.6%. And that was the year he split between Golden State and Minnesota. He's never been above 56% true shooting percentage, and he's 60.5% right now. Take that a step further, dive a little bit deeper into the numbers, and it actually didn't make me feel that much better because it tells me that this is a little bit fluky. And herein lies the reason. I don't want to digress too much here, but herein lies the reason why I think the Wolves are still considering trading him. I don't think they will, but why I think this is still on the table. His field goal percentage from within 3 feet of the basket is 70.1%, the highest of his career. Now, he's still only shooting about 12% of his shot attempts from within 3 feet of the basket, basically at the rim, which is where he's been the last three seasons. So the frequency of shooting at the rim is not up, but the percentage is up almost 5% over 2 years ago and about half a percent higher than last year. So career high shooting at the rim. Between 3 and 10 feet, a career high 51.2%, which is basically floaters, right? Floaters, short fallaways that he likes to shoot when he penetrates a little but doesn't want to get all the way in among the tall trees. You know, basically like the elbows on down, right? 51%, easily a career high, 3 points better than his next best shooting percentage from within 10 feet, from 3 to 10 feet. And by the way, last year he was only 39% from there. So that's 12% higher from 3 to 10 feet. 16 feet to 3 point range, so long mid-range jumpers, 51.6%, which is nearly identical to his career high of 51.7 in the season he split, the shortened COVID shortened season he split between Golden State and Minnesota. So basically tied for a career high there too. So he's shooting the ball better in effectively all. I mean, he's right in the same neighborhood as his career highs for 10 to 16 feet. So basically inside the 3 point line on 2 point attempts, he's shooting career highs almost everywhere, which feels a little fluky, feels a little bit noisy, right? Because is that really sustainable? How much of that is like, hey, we're only 49 games into the season. Like this stuff could change. But all that means together, he's shooting the best 2-point percentage of his career by far. 54.2% on 2-point shots, which is 6 percentage points better. I take that back. 5 percentage points better than his previous career high from on 2-pointers for a season. 54.2% on 2-pointers. And so a career high on twos, 39.1% on threes, career high on 3-point percentage, and currently 87% from the free throw line. That's also a career high. So, turns out if you shoot career highs on twos, threes, and free throws, your true shooting percentage is going to be up over 60%, and overall, your numbers are going to look really good. A lot of that's due to this hot stretch recently where D'Lo's played extremely well. No Karl-Anthony Towns, Rudy Gobert in and out of the lineup. D'Lo and Ant, Marty and I talked about this on the postcast after Saturday night's win over the Kings. D'Lo and Ant are really learning how to play off of each other and, you know, take turns in a healthy way, not like a take turn offense like was happening earlier this season. Lots of ISO with Kat as well. This feels a lot more, you know, measured when D'Lo and Ant kind of take turns taking over a game where you ride the hot hand and it seems to be working. Some of this doesn't feel sustainable. The 2-point percentage stuff is a little bit worrisome to me. It's not great. He's got a career high turnover percentage with basically a career low assist. No, it is a career low or lowest since his first season assist percentage, right? So basically career high in turnover or career worst turnover percentage, career worst assist percentage. That's not great. So you look a little bit further, it's not all gravy. It doesn't take away from how well he's playing recently, but that could be something where Tim Connelly looks at the profile of D'Angelo Russell's season and also looks at some of the peripheral numbers and says, hey, if I can recoup some value, because remember, the quick reminder here is the Wolves lose his salary slot if he walks in free agency this summer. They don't automatically get that 30-some million in cap space. It's not that clean. So to recoup some value, you'd have to trade him now. However, you know, I think if this team's healthy and around 500 and Kat's on the floor, I think a deal would get done. I think you trade Russell. I don't think Connelly does it now because they need his offense. With no Karl-Anthony Towns and apparently no update on his, you know, he's been out 2 months. We haven't heard anything. Finch was cagey about it before the game and media availability on Saturday about, you know, why Towns hasn't been on the bench recently. We don't know what's happening with Karl-Anthony Towns. We don't know when he's back. Making matters more complicated. You're down a little bit in terms of punch with Torian Prince. You have one less guy to initiate offense in Jordan McLaughlin. Do you really want to rock the boat by trading D'Angelo Russell? I don't think he will. But I do think he's still considering it. And there's reports here recently, Michael Scott of Hoopsype is talking about it still, that the Wolves are considering trading D'Lo. And I think it's because Tim Connelly can see through some of these numbers and realize some of this is a hot streak. Some of it's a little fluky. The underlying numbers aren't as positive. But again, back to my initial point, I still think he's an above average point guard. I think he's a very good player. I think all the advanced metrics last year and this year say a lot of times it's undersold how good he can be. The problem is the high variance in his play. So expect there to be rumors up until the deadline. We're now within 2 weeks. It's, you know what, a week from this Thursday. So I would expect there to continue to be some rumors. I would be surprised if D'Lo was traded. I don't think he will be. I just don't think that that sort of boat rocking is something that Tim Connelly wants to do at this stage in this particular season. All right. I want to talk about some team-wide trends and specifically related to defense. We're going to do that here next. Today's episode of Lockdown Wolves is brought to us by our title sponsors, our friends over at Prize Picks. On Monday night, Wolves Kings, I would take Rudy Gobert rebounds over. He dominated the glass against the Kings on Saturday. I think he'll do it again against Sacramento. If you're not familiar with Prize Picks, go check it out. If you're wondering how it works, I'll tell you. You just pick 2 to 6 players. If they'll score more or less than their Prize Picks projection, you can win up to 25 times your money on any entry. There's no competing against other people either. It's just you versus the projections available. They offer projections on any sport that you watch. Of course, that includes the NBA as well as the NFL, NFL playoffs. I guess now we're down to just the Super Bowl left. But also baseball, which is about to start soon. Of course, NHL, college sports, really any sport. You can make your entry in less than 60 seconds. It's extremely easy to do. Download the Prize Picks app or go to prizepicks.com to sign up today and play daily fantasy sports. First-time users can receive a 100% instant deposit match up to $100 with the promo code LOCKEDON. If you deposit $100, Prize Picks will give you $100. If you deposit $50, they'll give you $50. Don't forget to enter our promo code LOCKEDON at sign up for an instant deposit match up to $100. Okay, let's talk a little bit about the Wolves as a whole. What we've seen recently, what concerns me about how they've been playing, even during the stretch, again, winning 11 of 15, they've won 3 straight now. Of course, that blip against the Rockets last Monday is harmful because otherwise we'd be talking about, 12 of 15? And I mean, if they hadn't lost the Rockets, we'd be talking about a 6-game win streak. And, you know, the only losses during this long streak, I guess you could go back before the Detroit loss. But in the middle here, losing at home to Utah by 1 and on the road to Denver by 4, those are hardly like terrible losses, right? So you've got the Detroit loss and the Houston loss are really bad, and you've had a couple competitive losses. So for the most part, playing really well in these last 15 games. And I think the most interesting thing, before I get to a couple of somewhat concerning items, is how similar the Wolves' defense looks right now, the profile of the Timberwolves' defense looks to last year's defense. Remember last season, I talked about this as far back as like last November. So not, you know, a year ago, November, last season's team early in the season. I talked about how, you know, will the Wolves defense be sustainable as a top 10 defense? They fouled a ton. They didn't rebound the ball. High turnover, you know, relying on a risky defense, trying to generate steals, which then in turn led to easy offense. And while the Wolves offense struggled early last season, they were kind of buoyed by this fast break offense last year. And ultimately, it did catch up, right? Well-coached teams, teams that could pass the ball really well, were able to take advantage of the Wolves' blitzing defense last season again, 21-22. And the Wolves had to make some adjustments towards the end of the year. They finished 13th in defensive rating, at least according to Basketball Reference, you know, kind of in that 12 to 15 range, and had some issues against Memphis in the playoffs because they had to vary their defensive strategy. So in the offseason, the Wolves, of course, make the blockbuster trade. They acquire Rudy Gobert, hoping they can play more of a traditional drop pick and roll coverage, half-court defense that's, again, more traditional, less risky than a blitzing high wall defense. And if you're not familiar with that, last year, the Wolves blitz pick and rolls, meaning Jared Vanderbilt often, Karl-Anthony Towns, whoever was guarding the big that was screening, they were trying to trap ball handlers and extend their defense out beyond the three-point line to try and generate turnovers, basically. Trap the ball handler, jump passing lanes, and good teams were able to make skip passes from, you know, from the top to the opposite corner, or put somebody near the elbows and or near the nail and just kind of orchestrate that way. And well-coached teams, good passing teams, veteran teams were able to kind of eventually pick that defense apart late in the season. This year, the Wolves started by playing almost exclusively drop, which made a lot of sense when Gobert is involved in the action. He's been the league's premier drop big over the past several seasons. But then with just Towns on the floor, they tried mixing in some blitzing, and that seemed to be working. And Gobert struggled some in drop at times earlier this year, and there's a lot of theories as to why. Of course, the legs with Eurobasket this summer, Gobert maybe not in, you know, maybe worn down a bit, not comfortable with the coverage, the perimeter defense at times lacking. D'Lo struggled massively defensively early in the year. Jalen Noel's been awful at the point of attack. Anthony Edwards has had some rough games. So there's lots of reasons why the defense struggled early. And now you look up at the defense again, and they're right to where they were last season. So going back to last year, they finished the year 13th in defensive rating. What was the profile? Second to turnover rate, that generated a ton of turnovers. Dead last in free throw rate. They fouled a ton. They averaged more personal fouls, or they were second in personal fouls per game, and dead last in free throw rate, meaning they committed the second most fouls per game. They allowed the most free throws per field goal attempt to opponents last season. They were 27th in defensive rebound rate. 27th. So what? Fourth worst in defensive rebound rate. They were third in blocks, third in steals, second in turnover rate. So again, wreaking havoc, getting out in transition. They were number one in pace last season, number one in three-point attempts, all that stuff. That's what we saw last year. That was the high-risk, high-reward defense, and it worked to the tune of getting them the seven seed, getting them into the out of the, you know, through the play-in and into the first round, and giving Memphis a run for their money. Now, this season, where are we at? We're a little more than halfway through the schedule. The Wolves have the number 12th ranked defensive unit, 12th in defensive rating, finishing last year 13th. They're number four in turnover rate. Last year, they were number two at the end of the season. They're 21st in free throw rate, so they're a little bit better at not fouling this year. Last year, they were dead last, so they've improved a little in that regard. They're also, by the way, they're 20, they're third worst in fouls per game. They're 28th in defensive rebound rate. So one spot worse than last season. They finished 27th. So from second to fourth in turnover rate, 27th to 28th in defensive rebound rate, and 30th to 21st in free throw rate. All that's extremely similar. The opponent's effective field goal percentage is basically the same. So you're looking at a profile of a defense that's eerily similar to what it was last season. And actually, blocks per game are down. And we know Rudy's are down. We've talked about that. The Wolves are down in steals per game as well. So after all that, after like, hey, this defense is going to be top five and like it's going to change, it's going to be so different, it'll be less hectic, to the reality of like, oh man, maybe this defense isn't good. Maybe Rudy's lost a step. Maybe they, you know, maybe Chris Finch is going to get fired. Like, you know, all this stuff. And I never said that on the show, of course, but there's this like swing back the narrative that like this defense is a disaster. And now you look up and it's effectively the same as last year. The peripherals and the result in terms of 12th in defensive rating, it's basically the same as it was last year, and the same profile. So what gives? You know, I don't really know at this stage. I think it's because they've played a bunch of different coverages and now Rudy's getting more comfortable. And you still have the same perimeter players, right? Jaden McDaniels and Anthony Edwards. The only difference being Patrick Beverley not being with the team anymore, but you still got guys that are going to, I mean, D'Angelo Russell can hunt steals pretty well. He's a big player, great anticipation skills, big wingspan, you know, great size for a guard. D'Lo's going to hunt steals. Ant is ultra athletic, loves to hunt steals. Jaden McDaniels, the length, the deflections, all that stuff. It's effectively the same team when it comes to perimeter and wing defenders. So you're going to get a lot of those same results. I think as the season goes on, Rudy's going to catch up in terms of block rate. He had three blocks against whoever they beat Friday, Memphis. He had three blocks against Memphis Friday. I think he only had one Saturday against the Kings, but he affected so many shots. I mean, the eye test would tell you Rudy's defense has improved greatly of late. So I think we're going to see, I think we're going to continue to see the free throw rate tick downwards, or the opponent free throw rate tick downwards. In other words, trend in the right direction. I think eventually, and especially once Karl Anthony Towns comes back, and who knows when that'll be, the defensive rebound rate will improve a little. We may see the turnover rate drop a little as they start to play more, you know, almost exclusively drop with Rudy Gobert. But maybe not. I mean, maybe Ant and Jaden McDaniels and D'Lo and Kyle Anderson and the length of this Wolves perimeter defense continues to jump passing lanes, get deflections, and head the other direction to try and get some easy points in transition. Now, of course, we've seen the transition offense struggle throughout the season, although I think it's improved a bit of late. But all that to say, here we are. Very similar defense to last season, which is like manageable, right? Obviously, you expect an improvement when you acquire a multi-time defensive player of the year in Rudy Gobert, and so perhaps it continues to improve, and it climbs from 12th best into the top 10. These next few games are going to be really difficult to do that during against Sacramento, and then Golden State. You get Orlando, but then consecutive games against Denver, Utah, Memphis, Dallas. The offenses they're going to have to play are really, really good. I mean, Memphis, the number one offensive, Sacramento is the number one offensive rated team in the league, and the Wolves did a really good job against them on Saturday. Memphis is a highly rated offensive team, and same thing. They did a great job, held them to 100 points on Friday. Obviously no Desmond Bane, but all that to say, the defense is playing much, 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 much better of late. It's just strange to me that they're doing it a very similar way to how they did it last year. So that'll be something to monitor here moving forward. All right. I want to close by talking a little about the upcoming schedule of the Western Conference as a whole, the matchup against the Kings, some takeaways from the Kings game on Saturday, and then we look ahead to this same matchup on Monday night. So we're going to do that here next. Today's episode of Locked On Wolves is brought to us by our friends over at TurboTax. Go to TurboTax and don't do your taxes. Meet with an expert who will do them for you. TurboTax experts can relieve you from the stress of taxes and file for you so you can do, well, not taxes. Show your eyes things that are not taxes. Unpack a moving box of not taxes. Taste, not taxes. Sing, not taxes, a lullaby. Hope, not taxes, sleeps through the night. Grab a saddle and ride, not taxes, into the sunset. With TurboTax, an expert will do your taxes from start to finish, ensuring your taxes are done right, guaranteed, so you can relax. Feels good to be done with your taxes, doesn't it? Come to TurboTax and don't do your taxes. Visit TurboTax.com to learn more. Intuit TurboTax, full service products only. Video meeting while expert does your taxes required. See guarantee details at TurboTax.com/guarantees. All right, let's close today by talking a little about Wolves Kings from Saturday and what to expect on Monday night with, of course, the same matchup at Target Center. The biggest takeaway for me on Saturday was, going back to a little bit what I just talked about, it was the Timberwolves' overall team defense. I think that the entire performance was keyed by interior defense, making life more difficult on Domantas Sabonis. Yes, he started hot. He had another good stretch. I think it was third quarter. But for the most part, Rudy Gobert was really good in terms of interior defense. I thought the Wolves collapsed well and tried to kind of force the ball out of his hands and out to the perimeter. And, you know, the Sabonis, the pairing between Sabonis and Kevin Huerter is a really good one for the Kings. Sabonis assists on a high percentage of Huerter's three-point attempts. And the Wolves did a good job of managing that in this game. Again, the collapsing interior defense was a huge part of that. So the interior defense impacted what the Kings were able to do from the perimeter. Sacramento only made 9 threes in this game. They shot like 27.3%. Huerter was just 2 of 7. The Kings as a team were 9 of 33 for 27.3%. And it started with the collapsing interior defense. It started with strong pick and roll defense, other than kind of the De'Aaron Fox, like, you know, hit the turbo button as he often does there at the end of the game and scored a bunch of points quickly. But for the most part, Wolves pick and roll defense is really good. And Fox and Sabonis are very much a pick your poison duo. And the Wolves did enough. And then they rebounded too. And that, again, that all goes with it, right? Going back to the defensive conversation, it's very odd that the Wolves have had a top 12 defense the last couple of seasons for most of the last 2 years and have been a bottom five defensive rebounding team the entire time, going back to the start of the 21-22 season, because defensive rebounding is a huge part of, in fact, defense. I like to say this, and I remind my 8U basketball team this all the time. The only ways you can end a possession are if the other team scores, if they turn it over, if you get a steal, or if you get a defensive rebound. That's the only way you get the ball back, right? So defensive rebounding, unless they're scoring or you're forcing a turnover, which again, the Wolves do a lot of, and that's why the defense has been good the last couple years overall. The only other way you end a possession is by grabbing a defensive board. And the Wolves did that against Sacramento, which was, again, out of character. They were a +8 on the glass, the Wolves were. And again, the interior defense led to some rushed threes. They did a good job closing out under control. They forced all these misses, 9 of 33 from three for Sacramento, and then they rebounded the ball well enough. And that, to me, they have to do that again Monday, right? And Marnie and I talked about this on the postcast, but Chris Fitch has said this before. The team that loses the first two consecutive games is at a bit of an advantage in a sense because they can make adjustments. And if you're the winning team, what else are you going to say besides run it back? You're not going to guess what their adjustment's going to be. Over the course of a playoff series, you may do that. But when you're talking just two games in the middle of a season, you're not going to sit there and say, okay, well, I think they'll do this to adjust to what we did. And so let's counter adjust by doing this because you don't know what they're going to do. And so you tell your team like, hey, we did all this right on Friday. Let's do it again on Monday, or excuse me, on Saturday. Let's do it again on Monday, which is great. But what adjustment are the Kings going to make? And the two things that I'm most worried about that the Wolves didn't do well were turning the ball over. They turned the ball over 19 times in this game, which is unsightly. The Kings turned it over only 9 times. So turnover is number one. Number two, the free throw disparity. And hopefully that was a bit fluky, but we know that the Wolves commit a lot of fouls, right? We know that the Wolves allow opponents to shoot a lot of free throws. Again, better than last year. They're 21st in the league in opponent free throw rate. But they don't get to the line enough themselves to really combat that. The Wolves are 14th in free throw rate as a team offensively. But the differential in this particular game against the Kings was 15. The Kings shot 12 more free throws in the first half. They shot 3 more in the second half than Minnesota and ultimately shot 36 to the Wolves' 21 free throw attempts. And they made them at about the same clip. The Wolves are, you know, good enough from the line when they get there, kind of middle of the pack in terms of percentage. But the bigger thing is the attempts, right? And the Wolves must improve that free throw rate against the Kings. I mean, it got dicey at the end. It got closer than it should have been. The Wolves won by 7, but they needed that Anthony Edwards dagger 3. That step back to really close it out. So I'm a little bit worried about the free throw rate. I'm worried about the turnovers because we've seen these sloppy, careless turnovers, a couple from Ant, a couple from D'Lo. The turnovers are really the only thing that Anthony Edwards has really struggled with of late. I mean, he had 6 in this game against the Kings on Saturday, and like 3 of them were ridiculous. Like the one towards the end of the game, you know, doesn't really count because they were going to win and he just fired the ball down the court, went out of bounds. So even if you just call it 5, though, 5's a lot of turnovers. Even for somebody that's got the ball in their hands as much as he does, go back and look at his last several games. And he had 6. I guess he only had 2 against Memphis on Friday. But going back before that, 6 against the Kings, 4 against the Pelicans. And then before that, 6 against in the loss to Houston, 5 in the win over Houston, 5 to the win over Toronto in the win over Toronto. So you're looking at, 5 of the last 6 games, he's had 4 or more turnovers, and 4 of the last 6, he's had 5 or more turnovers. So that, to me, is the only real kind of blight on Anthony Edwards, blemish on Anthony Edwards' record over the last few games. He needs to not turn it over quite as much. And, you know, the Kings defensively are, the bigger thing is how good they are offensively, right? They're 21st in defensive rating. The Kings don't turn over teams all that often. They're middle of the pack. They're 15th in defensive turnover rate. So there's really no excuse for the Wolves to turn it over 19 times against this Kings team. And again, so many of those were just throwing the ball out of bounds, sloppy plays, and you'd rather have the dead ball turnover than the live ball turnover, but it's still too high of a number for the Wolves. Looking ahead at the schedule, Sacramento Monday, and then that's game 3 of a 5-game homestand, Golden State on Wednesday. And of course, Golden State has been really up and down. They've alternated wins and losses for the better part of the last couple of weeks. They did win their second straight game this weekend. They've beaten the Grizzlies and Raptors consecutively. So they're now a game above 500. They're right behind the Wolves in the West. So that's going to be a tough game Wednesday against with the Warriors. And then you get Orlando on Friday, winnable game. The weekend off, 2 consecutive days off finally for the Wolves. And then you get the home and home against Denver next week, Sunday and Tuesday, Sunday the 5th, Tuesday the 7th. At Tuesday games, a TNT game, home for Denver, away at Denver. Those are going to be big, big games for the Wolves before you then take on another series of teams that are near you in the standings, Utah, Memphis, Dallas. This is a tough schedule. Outside of Orlando, I mean, it doesn't get much tougher than the next couple weeks for the Wolves. At least the next 4 are still at home, but the Wolves really have to take advantage. And I know it's tough. They really have to win 3 out of 4 to feel great about this homestand. You got to win 3 out of 4. Sacramento, Golden State, Orlando, Denver. You know, it'd be easiest to beat Sacramento, Orlando, and Golden State, probably. Although I think the Wolves match up a little better with Denver. But all that to say, tough schedule, upcoming. The Wolves have to keep playing like they did on Friday and Saturday. And it starts with this win against the Kings on Monday, a potential win against the Kings Monday. And that's a very difficult thing to do, is beat a team twice in just 3 days. All right, we'll go live again following the game. Again, we do that on the Locked On Sports Minnesota YouTube channel, so go subscribe to that if you haven't already. Myself and Marnie Gellner from Bally Sports North. When she wraps up the TV postgame on Bally Sports North, then she joins me live on the Locked On Sports Minnesota YouTube channel for the postcast. And then if you can't catch that live, you can go back and listen. In fact, if you're listening right now to the audio feed of this podcast, the previous episode would be our postcast from Saturday's game against Sacramento. So go check that out if you can't watch live on Monday night as well. A big thank you to those of you that do make Locked On Wolves your first listen every day. Of course, this show is free and available everywhere, including YouTube, as well as all of your favorite audio platforms. You can also download the Locked On Sports Minnesota app on both Roku and Amazon Fire TV. You can also follow on Twitter at Locked On T-Wolves and at BBeacon with two B's, two E's, C-K-E-N. Of course, the Locked On Wolves podcast is part of the Locked On Podcast Network. Remember, the Locked On Network is your local experts on all the biggest stories. Now make your second listen the Game to Game NBA podcast. Every moment, every top performance, and every result, Locked On Game to Game covers every game from across the NBA with local analysis that only Locked On can deliver. Follow Game to Game on Locked On NBA, available on the Odyssey app, YouTube, and wherever you get podcasts. Once again, I'm Ben Beacon. This is the Locked On Wolves podcast, and we'll catch you next time.